Our gospel reading this morning is from Matthew. I chose selected this passage because of the theme of our moment. And it's not a long passage, but I think it's very reflective of the attitude of Jesus, and thus perhaps how we might shape our own attitudes about the subject of children. The little children were being brought to him in order that he may lay his hands on them and pray. The disciples spoke sternly to those who brought them. But Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me, and do not stop them, for it is to such as these that the kingdom of heaven belongs." And he laid his hands on them and went on his way. The Gospel of the Lord. You can only imagine the parents who brought their children to have Jesus put his hands on them, because probably, more than likely, Jesus was attractive enough and gentle enough that they would like their children to know him. But more than that, they probably saw and experienced some of the things that happened when Jesus touched other people's lives, that people were healed, they were released from some of the bondages of their lives, the blind saw, the lame walked, and people were restored to dignity. And I can only think of, even in third world countries today, where children are not seen as anything more, in some cases, than property. Certainly that was true in Jesus' time. And in order to keep the line of the lineage for Israel, for the Jewish culture, to continue, children were essential, which is why the Old Testament makes it very clear that you always welcome a child because you never know which one will become the Messiah. The children didn't have much standing. So here was a person who allowed them somehow to recognize that there was something truly special about their own children, regardless of who they would become, but simply because they were. They are today. Children, as we have said earlier in this service, children bring new hope and new possibilities. Now, when a child is born, we've all been a part of the birth experience, not the birth experience, but newborns being born, people being born, and we all love babies. This church lights up when the kids come prancing in, you know. No, Tegan and Dorothy and Francis and David and all the little ones, and then the older ones, the Thomas kids, they walk in here and there's another level that happens. And it happens because when you're in the presence of young people, those of us who are older now, suffering from the senility gene, it's true, it's there. I just read it. That when we're in the presence of children, even if they're not behaving, there's something inside that kind of leaps to that place where everything is well. You know, it's really okay. Yesterday I had a baptism here. The older brother was baptized here. He's now 4. I said to him, "Charlie, how did you get so big?" He said, "I'm 4. I said, "That would count for it." He's got a little brother now. And that's what they have done to this family has brought them to a place at least once to recognize that there's something very unique about these little guys. And I made sure they understood before they left that it's their responsibility to see to it, not that they meet God, not that they go to church, but that you prepare them in such a way that they are opened to whenever God shows up in their lives, or when God finds them, they'll be able to say, "Okay." It may not happen in their youth, certainly won't happen when they're adolescent because they don't believe any of that stuff. Maybe in college, maybe somewhere in their lives, if we have prepared them to an openness to the possibilities that are yet to be known and explored and explained away by science, math, and physics, they just might have an experience of what we have been trying to do for ourselves for lots of years doing church. Why that's important, I think, is because it's true that when a child is born, everything changes. I know that's not a new phrase. I know Johnson & Johnson selling baby powder used it a few years ago to kind of remind us of the power of a child, but they were selling baby powder. They weren't advocating for children. But when a child is born, the whole world changes. We celebrate that every year at Christmas. A child was born 2,000 years ago, and we're still, some of us are still celebrating the fact that a child changed the world. This past week, we have been glued to the news about these 12 kids and their adult leader who were trapped in that cave. I don't know if any of you have ever been into a cave. I went to a mammoth cave down in Louisville, Kentucky. It's a state park. But you can go down into the cave, and the temperature is pretty much stable. It's like 56 degrees. And because it's a state park, there are all kinds of, you know, handrails and et cetera, et cetera. But there's some places you have to kind of crawl around these rocks and over the top of these things to get into the really big part of the cave. And when you're in there, they turn off all the lights so you can experience total darkness. And everybody gets spooked when you can't see your hand in front of your face. Because, you know, we don't see things. We see light reflected off of things. That's what our eyes do. They pick up the reflections. So you're really not seeing me. You're seeing light reflected off of me. Isn't that a thought? So you can always turn it off. Just pull the chain. But it's a scary feeling, and I thought that short experience I had when I was there and put it on these boys that were in that cave for well over a week, when they had one flashlight, which they had on and off as they needed it, as long as the batteries went on. But there was a whole period of time they sat there in absolute darkness, where they shouldered one another through a lot of the different situations they experienced, huddling to keep each other cold, warm, kind of helping each other through the painful process of maybe trying to sleep, digging a trough of some kind to keep the water from rising up above where they were. As the stories evolve and as the details come out, I'm sure there are going to be many lessons there. But these kids were deep, deep in a cave. And that had to be terrifying. Would be terrifying for us as adults. Imagine yourself at 13 going through that experience, not knowing if anybody's coming, and even when they got there, not knowing that you would get out. It had to be horrifying. But interestingly, as soon as it was announced, people came from various parts of the world to help. The United States was there. England was there. In fact, the British were the first ones to get through to talk to the kids. And the world was riveted. Now, we've lost a lot of children in horrible situations over the centuries. I was thinking of Charles Lindbergh's son, who was kidnapped way back when it was just newspapers and very little bit of radio. So the expanse of that news didn't go too far, but the American people were kind of riveted on what happened to that poor kid. And various other occasions when a school bus crashed or went over a ravine, when you heard it was a group of tourists from Las Vegas, you weren't so concerned. But when it's a bunch of school kids, something happens when it involves children. And in our own state, the horror of Newtown, fortunately because of the advance of media and social media, that word spread far and wide. And lots of the world was riveted on what was going on in Newtown. And in spite of the horror, there were some who claimed that it was a fake, that we made it up. Some who were writing insensitive things to the parents and the people at the school. But the rest of us were caught up in the moment and had a hard time to breathe for well over a month. And the only thing that broke it up was the fact that we had to go through Christmas. And it must have been horrible for those families. These kids had the whole world waiting for them. Everybody in the world was holding their breath. If you watched any of the BBC or you read any of the bigger newspapers, you had quotations from governments all over the world, even in Africa, who are making comments about the plight of these kids. Languages that I don't understand, but the emotion that everybody understands and shares. When I was a kid, I think it was about 1958, you probably know better than I do, I saw a movie, which I've seen several times as an adult. It was called The Day the Earth Stood Still. Anybody remember that old black and white science fiction thing? Where this spaceship kind of lands someplace, I don't remember the details, and people try to shoot at it, and the government's kind of throwing bombs at it and doing our usual thing of welcoming people and understanding what we don't know. And eventually, toward the end, with all the frustration and the fear that was generated, the door opens, and out comes this robotic figure who has no face, just as a humanoid, but no real features, and walks out to the edge of the platform and basically says, if you don't change, we're going to take over. We'll be back. But your choice is change the way you are doing things. I didn't understand the depth of that when I was, whatever I was, 12. I didn't understand much when I was 12. But what I came to understand was, at that point, maybe with all the stuff we have going on today, with the world in shatters that it is, and it just seems to get multiplied and more trashed, and it just gets worse from my perspective. Maybe we need an alien invasion. Some satellite to come down here and somebody to step out and say, you know, people, get your act together or we're going to take over. Because what you're doing now isn't working. The day the earth stood still, they got that message. These kids this past week stopped the earth. And in spite of all the continuing rhetoric and political stuff that dotted the airwaves, these kids were the focus. And you couldn't wait to the next news brief to let you know somebody had reached in there and gotten them out. And the first three or four came out, and the ambulances went by, and everybody was cheering, etc. And we were thinking about what about the rest of them? And then the next group came out, and everybody's cheering, etc. We're saying, well, yeah, they're going to get the rest of them out. And they almost didn't. Because right after the last one was coming out, the pumps that had been running for all that time, pumping millions of gallons of water to lower the level enough for them to get out, suddenly stopped working. And the last few workers struggled to get out to safety. The whole world stopped. And I want to say this, there's a phrase in here that I circled for myself. Because it came to me, I don't know, when I was writing this, about children, that these are the changing face of God in our world. It's hard for us to look at each other, I think, and see, here is the face of God. I know if I throw that out at a huge assembly, there'd probably be a really? And you look at the people next to you and the ones that you don't get along with and the people in town that kind of disagree with you and all that stuff that complicates our lives. And we deny the reality that God somehow can be present in each other. But these are the changing face of God. And I want us to focus on this just for today. The day you were born and the day I was born, the world stood still. They didn't know that you were born, but those that did had so many hopes and saw so many possibilities and wondered where and how and who and what would become of this new face. We were born in the same family. I was born after her, but I'm sure when I was born, the three girls said, "Oh God, we don't need him." But they mothered me to death. And I remember at least that I belong there. And you know, that's more than what a lot of kids today experience. And that's a culture. That's not an individual thing. That's a cultural thing. That children are not recognized for their uniqueness and for being a new face of God. They're not. But think about yourself and your birth. The world did stop, and God had a new face. And you know, even though your face has changed, and we've gotten gray, and we get rickety, some of us can still function very well, but then there are others that you get up in the morning and go, "Oh God, now what?" But you're still the face of God. We are still the changing face of God. If we can see ourselves at a baptism, we're celebrating a first birthday, or holding a newborn in our hands, and have that experience, why can't we have the same experience when we're together, when we're among strangers, when we listen to all the claptrap and make enemies instead of recognizing the changing face of God among us? I know it's ideal, but it starts, I think, with a recognition that each of us is the face of God, and so is everybody else. It's just a thought. Sunday morning. Amen.